Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is John Kerr, and I'm the general manager for the East Down Property Group, which is half of County Down, pretty much all the important bits, I like to think, including Mount Stuart, which is, I think, the most important sort of house that the National Trust looks after. Obviously, we've got another 300, so there's a bit of debate around that. But welcome, anyway. Throughout Mount Stuart conversations, we have heard from many leaders in their field, academics, politicians, and writers, all people with long and varied careers. However, good conversation seeks to include a wide range of people and viewpoints. In this conversation, we seek to specifically consider how society in Northern Ireland works to ensure that the voices of our future leaders can be heard. I'm delighted to introduce our facilitator, Sarah Havlin. She's an alumni of the Global Leadership Institute of Boston, and with a wide and varied legal career and many years' experience in public inquiry and adjudication, she is the perfect facilitator for our debate. And I will hand over to her to introduce the members of our panel, all of whom have been particularly have particular perspective on supporting the development of young leaders and to whom we are all very grateful. So without further ado, I shall pass you over to Sarah. Sarah, thank you very much.
Thanks very much, John, and thank you everybody for coming today. I want to open this conversation and keep it as informal as we can. So we will welcome questions from the floor and participation from the floor as well. We're talking about creating tomorrow's leaders, and I think that leadership is one of these theories that changes as societies change. And I think I'm going to be interested to hear from our panel today as to what they think leadership for Northern Ireland will look like and the emerging generation in Northern Ireland and how they're moving into strengthening their communities and what leadership looks like. Leadership doesn't just look like powerful orators, authoritarian figures. In a modern society, we're certainly more responsive to role modelling, to leaders who inspire us. And I know the tag in leadership theory is transformational leadership, but I don't want to talk about the academic theory today. I really want to hear about practical experience. And I have some leaders here today with me who are going to help me by sharing their insights and experiences about leadership in Northern Ireland, how that's changed over the years, and how that's maybe looking different for the future. So I'm going to introduce the panel to start off with, and beside me is Darren Ferguson. And Darren is the founder and CEO of Beyond Skin, and it's a really innovative organisation in the community sector. He's a musician and development aid worker by background, but his project in Beyond Skin seeks to promote diversity and develop skills and confidence of young people in Northern Ireland. And he does that through intercultural arts, world music and diversity education projects. And then beside Darren is Jane Morris. And Jane is a former politician here in Northern Ireland. She was involved in the implementation of the Good Friday Agreement. She was elected to the Northern Ireland Assembly in 1998 as a member of the Women's Coalition. And she was appointed Deputy Speaker of the Assembly in 2000. And Jane has a professional background in journalism and a particular expertise in European issues. So she's particularly busy at the moment looking at Northern Ireland's position after the referendum. Beside Jane is Carwin Sharif. And Carwin hails from Kurdistan originally, and he's now living in Belfast. He's a human rights lawyer, very experienced human rights lawyer, but he's also a talented musician and an active humanitarian. And so his vision and values very much chime with Darren's, and he's been working with Beyond Skin, delivering cross-community cultural projects in Northern Ireland. And very interestingly, he's been working in North Belfast, and he's going to tell us a little bit about those projects that have been going on as we go through. Wendy Osborne is the Chief Executive of Volunteer Now. and Volunteer Now support voluntary initiatives across Northern Ireland. She's also a member of the Northern Ireland Policing Board, so she's a very active citizen here in Northern Ireland with 25 years experience in the voluntary community sector and vast leadership experience. She's led on the development of a global network of national volunteer centres, and she was awarded the OBE for services to volunteering. And then we have Sarah Newell. And Sarah is a young person who aspires to lead and change communities through empowering young people. Sarah is a former head girl of Hunter House College, and she's a passionate sportswoman. She's now studying youth work at degree level, and she's working with young people in interface areas in Belfast City, and she's doing a lot of very good work with young people living in more isolated communities, socially disadvantaged areas. And Sarah's passionate about physical activity and sport being a really important way to reach young people and to improve health and better outcomes for young people. So that's who our panel are today. I think just so that we can get to know them and understand a little bit more about each of them, I want them to tell us and share with us about their experience of leadership in terms of what's inspired them. Who do they think is a really, really good leader, a really inspirational person who's helped them move forward and achieve their own personal goals? So I'm going to start with you, Darren, and tell us.
Okay. Well, probably mine will probably might surprise a few people. Being a real keen musician and a real interest in music, especially music from around the world, I suppose my big inspiration when I was younger was artists like Peter Gabriel, who were pioneering kind of multicultural events and a human rights activist as well. And also artists like Nitin Sawhney, who we actually got our name from Beyond Skin, because that was his album, was called that. And interestingly, we're now working with Peter Gabriel and his WOMAD organisation. So all those years ago of being really inspired by him and his music, and also using music as a tool for empowerment and bringing people together and the challenge negative views, it's quite interesting that we're now actually working alongside him. So that's been a real thrill for me. But he would probably be, in music terms, I seem to get a lot of my inspiration from the arts and from music. So it'd be
and you got to meet him, yeah?
Yeah, several times, yes, and then quite kind of comical. You know, you have all these icons built up, but when you're backstage and you see Peter Gabriel for the first time coming out of a portaloo, you kind of think there's a it's not high.
You thought you might meet him, yeah.
Yeah, everything becomes normal after a while. So, yeah. But you know, people like that have been working so hard regarding especially in the cultural arts. I mean, they've been doing it for over 30 years anyway. So, a real inspiration.
Great, thank you very much, Darren. Jane, who's it been for you that's been particularly inspirational?
Well, I don't think it'd surprise anyone to say, in preparation for this, I picked my four, and they're all women. And I've got local to national to European and to global. And local is Mae Blood, Baroness Blood, a brilliant, brilliant woman. And she's fighting now for integrated education, and that's something I really believe in. So a great, great woman, and a great style about her. So I hope you all get to meet her. Lovely lady. By the way, her lovely story is when she first went to the House of Lords, she got nominated, of course, and someone said to the taxi driver, "Oh, you come from an estate? Is it a big estate?" She says, "No, and we've only just got inside toilets now, housing estate." Anyway, the next one is Mo Molum, an absolutely amazing lady. And by the way, can I just say, I think there should be a statue to Mo Molum somewhere in Belfast. Yeah. And anyone who wants to start that petition, you know, the fact she used to take off her wig and throw it down and talk and negotiate, etc. Yeah. Brilliant, brilliant lady. She really inspired me. Next one is getting a bit more controversial here, perhaps. I don't know, but it's Angela Merkel. I think she is she is the statesman of the European Union, but she isn't being given the sort of credibility that we should give her. And really, she's done wondrous things. And opening our borders, everyone's saying, "Oh, look what she did, it was all her fault." But she was being generous and thoughtful and caring and all of those right things. And my last one, this is the most controversial of all, Hillary Clinton.
Oh.
I'm sure you knew I would go for that one.
Oh, yeah.
I really do. 8th of November. And anyone who knows anyone in America, please pick up the phone and get them to vote for Hillary Clinton. Sorry, publicity stunt there.
And do you think female leaders have a different approach, Jane, to, than male leaders?
But, well, there have been a few exceptions, I would suggest. Margaret Thatcher maybe wasn't necessarily. The idea is that you don't pull the ladder up behind you. I don't know whether you know that. When someone gets to the top, you know, there's a tendency to pull the ladder up. They should keep the ladder down and allow it for others to come up to. Margaret Thatcher wasn't so brilliant with that ladder.
Yeah.
But yes, I do believe and hope that the more... I mean, it's about equality in society, you know. We're 50-50. We should be 50-50 at all levels,
yeah.
Whether it's top leadership or wherever. So.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I think is very attractive about some leaders, not all women leaders, I don't want to generalise about gender, but it's very common in women leaders that they combine strength and vulnerability, which I think is a really good combination that really does gel with people, that you maybe would have a female leader who's not afraid to show some vulnerability, and maybe that's where Hillary Clinton is going a little bit wrong at the moment, that people don't feel she has any vulnerability. Leaders like Mary Robinson, very often she would have made herself look and feel vulnerable so that people did connect with her. Do you think that's true?
Well, I suppose that in the typecast of a leader, you've got to be strong and sort of male, I suppose, is the typecast of a leader, and that's why people think that you can't cry,
yeah,
or you can't show emotions and things like that. And definitely, I would say that the modern leader is someone that people can empathise
yeah.
with. You know, and for example, well, about Hillary Clinton's pneumonia. You know, I think my response to that would be, well, it proves she's human.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you know, and that's about appreciating that there is a vulnerability and people can get pneumonia, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe she was wrong not to have opened up about it earlier, of course. But yes, I think that people can empathize much more with leaders who share emotions and show emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Thank you, Jane. Carwin, who has been your inspirational leader?
Thank you. I would like more to reflect on my childhood experience and bring some name was not from this part of the world. As you explained, I'm from Kurdistan, and most of you may know about Kurdistan, which is from Middle East, and it's there's a very long history of violence and problems there. And then I was quite a young person, roughly 11 to 12. There was a civil war, a very severe civil war, which tore the country apart into two, and then green zone and yellow zone, and it was quite aggressive period. And it was during that particular time, a man called Dr. Mahmoud Usman, Bakr Usman, who come on TV and played music for kids. And he was a doctor, a physician. Mm-hmm. And one of the presenters asked him, you're a doctor, you're treating patients, and how you can combine between yourself and art and music. And his answer was very simple. He said, if we want to protect people from violence, and to create a generation where it could be their leaders could not be more violent, we should teach them music, we should teach them to sing, and then if we have politicians, singers, and musicians, we could have not have a civil war.
Yeah.
Someone can play music, can kill people. That was a very, very simple answer, and that was a very intriguing point for me to... So the very genuine message that music could be a very, very influential tool to create, a peaceful world on one hand,
yeah.
and then leaders who believe in peace. And And that man was one of my ideals in terms of the community leaders. He was not a politician. He was not anyone who has any involvement with governments or anything. But he was quite a prominent name and face. And luckily, he's still alive.
Right. But very often, you get that strength of leadership coming from community leaders rather than political leaders, don't you? That the more authentic leadership can sometimes come from non-political leaders.
Of course, that was the point that should be highlighted in my story, where I took that man changed my whole life to kind of have adapt myself into some certain way where none of the political leaders could done so and could do the same to me. And for me, the question of leadership is not a political position, it's not a governmental position. For me, a leadership is about spirit and then someone who encourages you towards a very, very genuine human values. And then one of those approach towards that human values, for me, one of the most influential, I must say, is music and art, which reminds us of the values we have and the values we share and who we are as humans and the conscience even that we have towards each other. Mm. And then from that particular point, I took on guitar whilst I was a student. And I'm not a professional artist, by the way. So idea encouraged me to play guitar and then study and become a lawyer and then play guitar. Mm-hmm. So quite having a very, two different world in myself. And whilst come over here into Northern Ireland, and then I saw might be my qualification as a lawyer, not working here, about the those sort of formalities and routines. If you are a doctor, if you are an engineer, if you go to different country, you must requalify. In the meantime, I was having a different qualification, which I could have used and benefited myself as well. And then the new society, my new home, which I live in, and it was through Beyond Skin. And here we are.
Yeah, thanks. That's great, Karen. Thank you so much. And Wendy, who's been your inspirational leader and why?
Well, thank you, Sarah. You've already mentioned your name. Actually, I chose Mary Robinson, first woman president. Mm. I met her in 1992, and I think that's one of the reasons why I chose her, because in 1992 she was involved with us in looking at voluntary action, active citizenship on a cross-border basis. And one of the things that she said at that event really struck a chord with me, and I still believe it. I believed it then, I still believe it now. And it's about empowerment, that when people are volunteering and giving their time, empowerment is vital to how they do things and how they think. Mm-hmm. And she felt that empowerment was something that wider society could gain from. And I suppose we're talking about leadership. It seems to me that, leadership is about empowering others, and that's a very powerful thing. But also, after 7 years of president, she could have stayed on for another seven. Mm-hmm. In fact, I remember at that stage in 1997, there was a cry for her to stay on. But I think she was really a person who is principled and has a real set of firm values, which I admire. And so she went on to be the Human Rights Commissioner and has done lots of things mm-hmm. in relation to the United Nations since that. But the other thing that made me think of her recently was that I noticed that she was part of something called the Elders, which is a group of statesmen and women who really, I suppose, are still interested in voluntary action. They don't hold any political, but they are themselves believe that everyone can make a difference. Mm-hmm. And so I think, well, that's someone I can admire, because I believe what she was saying in 1992, and I still believe the role model that she is today. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really, really important, that people are values-driven and that their principles actually are something that's really important to them.
I'm a huge fan of Mary Robinson myself. She really was a fantastic leader. And as a law student back then, when she became president, we did a lot of, she was a lawyer by profession, so I read a lot of her articles and a lot of the things that she'd published. And she really was a massive influence for a lot of women in Ireland at that time. Good choice. Okay, Sarah, tell us about your inspirational leader.
Thank you. It's someone who isn't famous. It's my previous boss in America. Each summer I go and work for the Salvation Army in New Jersey, where I'm employed to be a junior staff director. Now, my first year out there, I was 18 years old. Had no idea that I'd be working there, but John took a risk on me to actually, he really empowered me to become an athletics director, to use sport as a way, as a catalyst to connect young people together. And in that, each year I'm addicted to it. I keep going back and back to this camp, because John is a man that leads with consistency. He holds his value to the forefront of who he is, and that really drives me forward. That really encourages me every day to actually work as best I can for the young people and for the mission they hold. He's someone that holds a vision really close to his heart, and the way he articulates that draws people alongside him, so you really want to work for him and for the mission, of course.
It's funny when you mention values there, that you're drawn to his values. I think that's key in terms of effective leadership, that if you know what that leader's values are and you share them, it's a really strong connection.
Exactly, and I think, you know, people are drawn to substance, they're drawn to consistency, because in a postmodern world, we are just driven by so many different things that are around us. There's many distractions. However, John has that consistency in his character, and you think, brilliant, I'm drawn to that. How can I learn from him? It's John Copeland.
Excellent. Good. A real-life working hero at the front line. Good. Okay. Well, thanks for sharing that, folks. I found that really interesting. I mean, in terms of leadership skills and what we regard as effective leadership and what that looks like, do we think that there's this idea that the great leader is someone who is very, very confident, has great presence, is very conviction-driven? Or is it something different? Is leadership something different? Is it more about, as you said, Sarah, values? So in terms of your own work, Darren, and you know, especially working in communities, what connects with people in terms of leadership? What do leadership skills and qualities look like?
I think from our case, we've always, as an organisation, probably adopted a different kind of model. And Carbon's been part of one of our kind of pioneering projects, working with some of the loyalist flip bands. And it was recognising, you know, qualities in people. They may be a good artist, musician, or just a good people person. But somebody who is actually an inspiration. And, you know, as we all know, working in the community sector takes up a lot of energy, you know, a lot of hours. And people, I get asked all the time, where do you get your energy from? And I say, well, from the people around me. And that could be somebody who's 10 years old or who's somebody who's 80 years old. And that's, I see that as kind of a leadership qualities in people all the time. And it's how do you draw that out? And how to encourage people to kind of to follow that path. And we're doing a big campaign now. I know there's a lot of young people in the audience here. We're doing a big campaign called Youth for Peace. We actually have a special guest, Emery, from the Netherlands, who's part of that programme. And it's been wonderful because it is seeing young people as not future leaders, but present leaders. And giving you guys the skills and the respect and resources to actually make a difference in real terms and switch the kind of attitude that young people are a problem and we need to throw money at dealing with the problem, and say is actually no, young people are now representing half the world's population and are actually the solution. So we need to invest in them as the solution. And so I get inspiration all the time. Today I've been inspired walking about this festival. I've been totally inspired going, wow, what an amazing person. Well, what a beautiful thing. Even what Carmen's just said there, what an amazing thing to say there. So,
and do you think then that's the key to leadership, to really effective leadership in communities? It's about empowering other people to be leaders themselves.
Absolutely, and inspire people. And a lot of leaders we look at in today's terms, we usually roll our eyes at. They don't inspire us. Whereas, you know, how wonderful it would be to hear, turn on the BBC News or someone and hear our leaders and you come away going, wow, I'm like a spring out of bed in the morning and do something positive. But we don't get that energy. So I think it is seeing the value in people and volunteering is a huge one as well.
Well, I think that's you know, exactly where I was wanting you to go with this, because you set up Beyond Skin when you were 29, I think, young. And you have a connection with Wendy because Wendy's organisation, Volunteer Now, used to be VSB, I think.
That's
isn't
right.
that right?
Yep.
And how did Wendy's organisation empower you?
Well, I got involved with VSB. They were doing a lot of overseas trips, a lot to Romania at the time. There was quite a lot of trips to Romania after the revolution out there. So I got to go out, and that was the turning point. And
that kind of just did it for you, And then you've taken all of that, all those skills, all of that capacity building that you got, and you're passing that on now into communities.
It's real life volunteering, puts you in the heart of a real life. And I think with the Romania experience, you know, when you see somebody crawl out of a manhole cover where they're living, you just think, like, there's something wrong here. There's something wrong, and this shouldn't be happening. And when you have an actual experience like that, which usually comes through volunteering, because you're put in a position out of your comfort zone, and you're there, and you just have to get on with it. So when you're put in a position, you see something like that, and we all have different stories of some things we've seen, you just go, there's something fundamentally wrong here with society when people are living like that. And it inspires you to do something.
And it inspires you to make an impact, which you have.
Yeah.
Wendy, do you think that there's a lot of young people here today that perhaps are future leaders of tomorrow? Do you think there are opportunities in volunteering and that leadership can be enhanced through volunteering opportunities?
Well, I most definitely think that. I mean, you know, I told the tale earlier that I was driving here this afternoon, and I said to my husband, "Oh, young Darren's on the panel." And my husband said, "Well, you know, Darren isn't so young anymore, Wendy."
I've got a few grey hairs now, hasn't he?
In comparison with me, of course. But it's simply because, people who have been involved with us and then remain active, and there are many, there are hundreds of thousands, actually, of people who volunteer and still are volunteering. They catch the volunteering bug. And I think if you catch it young, that's the best time to catch it, because it stays with you and you never let it go. And I think that there are, and it is about leadership. I mean, because the first thing that a volunteer does is step outside their own front door, and they decide to do something for someone else or for some cause or for some passion. And that has a ripple effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't see that is real. That is real community leadership.
Yeah.
And actually, that's what builds our communities to be resilient and to be the kind of communities that we all want to live in.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take that community leadership right down to that very common, you know, that really grassroots common denominator level. And so I'm inspired every day because my work is with volunteers of all shapes and sizes. And believe you me, they come in all shapes and sizes. And so it's fantastic to see what people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said on the news this week, there were two stories that struck me. One was Bernie McKenna, who's the chairperson of the Castle Caulfield Horticultural Society. And it came to the news during the summer because they were vandalised. They were ready to go for Ulster in bloom and then for Britain in bloom. And they had a whole series of vandalised, and it was a whole issue for them. But that small group of people kept going in that village, kept going and showed their resilience. And one Ulster in bloom, and I think are waiting now to hear about Britain in bloom. And I mean, and they did that. They rebuilt, and I think that's really fundamental. And then you had the two clergy, the Reverend Steve Stockman and Father Martin McGill, who were the Community Relations Council won the Civic Award for that. And it was the Reverend Stockman who was actually on Thought for the Day and BBC Radio Ulster. And he kept talking about it was only a cup of coffee. They won this award. It started off with a cup of coffee and a conversation. But actually what the conversations led to was a friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And the friendship overcame barriers, and through that friendship they were able to extend that out and show leadership through what started as a cup of coffee and friendship.
Yeah.
And you can't underestimate those ripple effects of what people are doing day and daily in Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
So I
from
have
one
a,
relationship.
Absolutely. Just... So leadership is something which we can actually grow throughout all of our communities, and it's not hierarchical. I don't see it as that, because over the centuries and over the years, we've seen leadership abused.
Yeah.
It's a negative as well as a positive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's to try to get that through our communities, that actually people are leaders and are being and showing leadership every day in Northern Ireland. Yeah. And that's what actually creates the well-being of our communities.
Absolutely. And people are perhaps leading and don't really call it that. People are connecting people, they're having positive engagement, they're leading in their families, they're leading in their communities, they're leading in schools, whatever it might be. And they perhaps don't think that they have leadership qualities. The really interesting thing, though, I think that you guys share is this idea of getting into different having different conduits into engaging with people. And Corbin and Darren, you've done this through music, which I think is really interesting because, as Wendy says, you know, it's not about hierarchy, it's not about dictating behaviour, but it's about sharing and connecting and you know, having ideas that maybe wouldn't have come around if you hadn't had some kind of creative contact with other people. So one of the things I think is really interesting and I think everybody would love to hear about is you mentioned the work that you'd done with, I think it's the Shankill Young Defenders, the Loyalist Flute Band, yeah, and the community in Ardoyne in North Belfast, where there would be a long-running, very, very tense community relationship. Maybe you can tell us about that experience and the community empowerment that occurred during that.
Of course. But before exactly going into that point, for me, the question of leadership is about very simple fact. Someone who just try to force you not to look at yourself, just to look at him, that is very, exploitative, version of leadership, which won't let you to unleash yourself and to see the potentials in yourself. And for me, the genuine leadership is that one who encourages you to look at yourself and to see what potentials you have. And then from that particular point, the person I mentioned, Dr. Bakr Osman, that was the character who remained with me through entire of my life. And then that was the encouragement point for me to involve with Beyond Skin, whilst I was about to re-engage in terms of practicing human rights through Queen's University and Law Center, but I was still working with Beyond Skin, because I entirely gotta believe that leaving everything behind for law to sort it out is not perfect, is not a perfect solution. So there is other things which can complement the solutions in terms of, especially in terms of, division and conflicts.
Yeah.
And then to cure the broken part with law and governments can't, and the traditional leadership can't cope with it, can't deal with it. And that is what resonated in my mind, Dr. Bakr Osman's message: if you want to for peace to prevail, teach people music, encourage people to sing and to share the stage. Then that particular point, I engaged with Ardoyne, I engaged with Shankill Defenders. So quite two different worlds in the very same place, but in terms of the engagement, that was the fascinating point. Both engaged. My engagement with both were highly valuable and very, very much precious for me, because I saw the point that they are approachable people and there is no buffer zone where you cannot go beyond that. They are people like me. And the way I like to engage, they all like to engage as well. But there is, we should, as people working through the community sector, to find the appropriate means to approach those particular areas within the society. And for me, the ideal was music. And it was a brilliant experience for me to see youth from Ardoyne engaging with youth from the other side of the society and bringing them together, and music brilliantly put them together to act and to support each other and act in cohesion. And then there was no barrier exist in a way that they engaged in music. And then if we take lesson from that, and in terms of the counter experience for me as well, as someone coming from a Muslim society and the way that Muslims been depicted, and you all know about that, and the funny assumption about terrorism and explosions, So, but that wasn't the case at all. And for me, my understanding, my long-term observation, it was entirely different from the moment I decided to involve. I was quite reluctant. I was quite, but somehow, personally uncertain what I'm doing and what I'm going to end up with. But it's just a question of encouragement, just you explained. It's just a question of encouragement, and I shall mention that encouragement hugely. The credit of that encouragement hugely goes to Bjornskin, who facilitated that that engagement, and for me to do what I the role that I can offer and the role that I can and I can perform, and it was incredibly highly valuable for the way that I see in the potential and the values that both societies hold in.
Yeah.
And there's only a need for catalyst, a catalyst element, just to bring them
together,
just to connect them.
And when you connect them, when you connected those communities, do you think they then start to generate their own solutions to their own problems? Do they become more creative in how they can move forward and how they could perhaps solve their own community issues?
Of course, that was the biggest point. We all try to always, articulate the way of the leadership between the whole project, Bjornskin, and the people within Bjornskin and around Bjornskin, and then the people from the genuine society, just to articulate the way that we are not showing you some place to go. We just encourage you for you to decide and to choose and to act, because we all we all confident that they are all respectful human beings and decent people living there. Mm-hmm. But due to some circumstances, they've been implied with the fact that this is the best way to live, to restrict yourself within certain boundaries. But if that people given a chance to,
and they need leaders to help them, and they need leaders to find a way in that's perhaps not political. And I think that's the most important work that you can do, and that you are doing in terms of finding cultural ways in. And Sarah, actually, I wanted to bring you in because in Northern Ireland, sport is one of those things that has always been a really positive way of engaging communities and for leaders to kind of find ways in from the side to help communities and empower communities. And I know that you've had some experience with using sport as a catalyst, as Carwin says.
Exactly. Another fantastic method to connect with young people is through sport. It is through active participation and encouraging that to exercise, to have a healthy lifestyle. And one concrete example I can give you is, I work for Youth Initiatives. I volunteer actually for them each week, and I absolutely loved it. We inspire initiative in young people. We awaken hope in their lives. And so we're based in East Belfast, West Belfast, Downpatrick, Derry and Banbridge. And we took the young people out on a residential from East Belfast to Ballintoy up the north. And they'd never been coasteering before. And in fact, none of them have actually been to the beach before. So sport has the ability to transform lives in that we're taking them from one social area to another. They're very sheepish about being there, really uncomfortable, but actually bringing inner city youth to an outdoor education place actually mobilizes them. It changes their character, their attitude. It brings about so much confidence, actually, and it instills hope in their being. So I've seen change in that way through sport. Also, I was working in Camden, New Jersey, which is renowned for one of the most dangerous cities in America. So I was able to just bring about a new methodology of youth work there, which was really needed. I was asked to facilitate some outreach work, particularly around the basketball courts that were there. So I thought, oh my goodness, who am I, some white girl going into their community? And there were black people there, Hispanic, and many other people trying to just play a basketball game. But I just thought that was an opportunity for conversation, for communication, to build up relationships with young people and older men that were there too, 18 to 24 year olds. And Carwin's right, it is a catalyst for change. It's a catalyst towards a positive relational environment.
So it also encourages people to engage in different ways, and it perhaps brings out a more natural instinct of humans interacting with each other, because if it is sport or if it is music or if it is something that doesn't really involve opinions or it's an instinctive interaction that maybe people don't do in their daily lives. It's not something they're used to.
Exactly, and you get people there who are comfortable there, so immediately there's no barriers, you're instantly driven into that area. People just really thrive in that environment, and from that we were able to network together and build up partnerships in Camden, which has really been beneficial.
And I think the common thread that's going through with a lot of is being said is that the work that you're doing is really about changing people's lives for the better, in terms of having positive impacts, which is essentially politics at work. Although none of you are politicians or elected representatives, but you are essentially working in a political landscape and changing people's lives. And of course, Jane, you do come from a background of having been in elected office as a politician with the Women's Coalition. I think, for me anyway, you know, the Women's Coalition, much missed, was a real example, an inspirational example of a minority voice in Northern Ireland actually having real impact. How difficult was the experience in the Women's Coalition in terms of, we have a very patriarchal culture in Northern Ireland, our leaders tend to be very male, we tend to have a very confrontational political dialogue. What did the Women's Coalition do that was different?
Well, I think just to start, we brought a certain amount of political naivety, which enabled us to go there really with no preconceived ideas. We were politically homeless. We weren't orange or green. We weren't one side or the other. We wanted to be new and different. And yes, we were. There was amazing times when we were treated strangely. I'll be diplomatic about it. But it actually was constructive because, for example, I don't know if people remember, some people remember on TV, and Monica and Pearl were said, "Moo, moo, sit down, you silly cows." And that was seen on TV. So when I was going out and saying, vote for the Women's Coalition, vote for the, they were saying, we certainly will, because we see how you're treated, because we saw it on TV. The people who were doing that to us didn't realise that it would be viewed badly. So it was counterproductive for them, and it would have helped us get in the back door. They didn't take us seriously, which was another thing, which is how we did get in. You know, they never thought we would actually get elected. If we didn't have a position on the constitution, all of this sort of stuff, and it wasn't just it was the political observers, it was the politicians, everyone was treating us as if, not taking us seriously. But there's a couple of things that I was thinking of. First of all, when you talked about music, I also think food is quite an important way of getting people together. And that was a good example of the Women's Coalition. Because what I did was school groups from politics students in particular, I used to bring them to Stormont and into the canteen. And they couldn't believe to see Gerry Adams with his tray and Paisley with his tray. And started, all in the same queue. It was amazing to actually see them all eating together. You know, they sat at different
They're normal.
Tables. Yeah. Another thing I was thinking of in terms of that was a good memory is hugely important for a leadership skill. And I know that there's a few politicians I've come across who meet someone and then you remember your name the next time. Mm-hmm. And that's about connection, you know, remembering the first name. And that's where my days of politics are soon to be over. But it's hard to have a good memory is so important.
Yeah.
Political naivety. Oh, a large bladder is also quite valuable. But all of that, yes, we were new, we were different. It was the right place, the right time, And, you know, and I think people definitely appreciate it. One last thing I'll mention, something that makes you angry. And that's why something like Brexit has made me angry enough to want to get back involved and fight for this not to happen. I'm sorry I'm turning political again, but
it's a big deal.
Galvanizes people. And if you get angry about something, then you want to do something about it.
And I think the Good Friday Agreement certainly defined my generation back in 1998 when I was just starting out in my career. I think the post-referendum political landscape is going to define your generation, if you're coming of age now. It is a massive issue, and it's yet to be seen what's going to happen. But I think it does create opportunity for young people in terms of moving into leadership, getting involved. As you say, if it's a cause, something that you feel passionate about, you may actually find that it pushes people in directions to get involved in whether it's civic life or politics or community sector or whatever. So it could actually have a positive impact as well.
I'll just say, yes, young people, of course. But there are a few of us in our over 60s or beyond, and there's a place for us as well. Yeah. I didn't get into politics until I was in my 40s.
Yeah.
And by the way, it was after my son was born that I sort of started realising I've got a responsibility to this. Mm. Like before that, I took off and I travelled the world for 10 years. I was away saying I didn't want to stay in Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to have anything to do with Northern Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
But it was when I came back and my son was born and I sort of realised, gosh, you know, I've got to get involved and do something so that he doesn't have to go through what we had to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a thing. So what I'm saying is, you know, you can't be older and still get involved. You don't have to just be youngster.
Absolutely. Do we think, I want to ask the panel about the different approaches to leadership style that maybe comes from the millennial generation, because I think that we have a generation who are emerging who are not as tolerant of hierarchical structures. Perhaps they're more attracted to flat structures. I know everybody in the academic world talks about matrix structures where we all collaborate rather than a top-down approach. And this idea of social media and instant communication means that this generation are much more about collaboration rather than a dictatorial style where they're being told what to do. What do you think? I mean, what should we expect from our future leaders, Darren, and coming out of the communities in Northern Ireland? What are they going to do differently for Northern Ireland, do you think?
I think the world is changing, and I know a lot of us probably turn on the news, and I've actually stopped watching at night because you just go to bed kind of just going, oh my goodness. And I think after spending the whole day, which is most of us do, is actually working communities and going, actually, there's a lot of good stuff going on here. You know, there's a lot of good change and things are happening. The news only reflects the bad news because that's what sells. Mm-hmm. So watching news late at night, now I've stopped doing that because of all of the good stuff happened through the day. It kind of dissolves that a bit. You go, oh, God, we're back to this again. So I think it's being careful what you're fed. And I think for, you know, young people, the tide's going to come back. I think we've been pushed so far, we've been let down by various members of society, various institutions, and I can see it a lot in young people that they don't like what's going on in the world. The refugee crisis is something which is all our responsibilities because it's just people trying to get to a safe place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our responsibilities to try and get into a safe place and then make a decision after that what happens. Not to stand around and try and make decisions while they're in desperate need. So I think for our tomorrow's leaders, it is going to be people who are probably not up on the pedestal and were in Stormont or very visible, but actually behind the scenes doing things. And I've seen a lot of leadership come from, you know, behind the scenes, and I like that model. You know, when people walk into my office, they don't know where I sit. There's no big director's chair, and I like that. I like this is a team effort here.
Yeah.
And people always say, "Oh, how many people work for you?" And I say, "Well, none, but a lot of people work with me."
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference. Is you know, that bringing that community sense into the workplace and in the school and your college. And how do we make this work together? How do we actually do stuff? And who are leaders in the room? Some leaders are very quiet, don't like speaking out in public, but they're still leaders.
Yeah.
It's
like Nelson Mandela actually said something similar, because he said a leader's like a shepherd that stays behind the flock. And I think it's he lets the most nimble go ahead. I mean, it's obviously borrowed from sort of Christian philosophy, but he lets the most nimble go ahead. Yeah. But the others will follow, and they'll not know that they're being directed from yes. behind. You know, it's the idea of not actually influencing people without actually being overt about it, that you're the one that's directing them. And I think that Wendy does come a lot. It's a very common trait in leadership in the communities and in the voluntary sector. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think in communities, you know, my knowledge is more about communities across Northern Ireland, but actually communities across the world, I think they work the same way. There are individuals who step forward and give leadership. Yeah. And often it's because there's a real need.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and there's a need in that community. I mean, you know, the United Nations have got these new 2030 goals. And one of the main aspiration behind that is no one will be left behind, which is a huge mm-hmm. aspirational statement.
Yeah.
No one will be left behind. But one of the things that's happening is that governments won't necessarily make sure that no one is left yeah. behind. Yeah. It'll actually be the people in communities
yeah.
who have a sense of care for others that will help that note to see that no one is left behind. So I think there is that is really strong in terms of leadership in Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
I mean, in 1974, I worked in the Lower Ormo as a volunteer. I'm not from Belfast. I was from a unionist background. The Lower Ormo was completely outside my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that really showed me that the people in that small area and small number of streets in the Lower Ormo, what they were really doing is there was community leadership in there to keep their children safe, to help their children to move forward, to look after the well-being of that yeah. community. Most of that was done by some very strong women in that community.
Yeah.
But there was that, and without that community leadership, that little community was often under siege.
Absolutely.
In many ways.
Yeah.
And without that community leadership, it would actually have been much blacker for that community. And I think we still see that in Northern Ireland, where individuals are coming forward, particularly in communities where they perhaps are under pressure,
yeah.
where there are leaders in those communities that are not set what we would consider around this panel, positive leaders.
Mm-hmm.
They're gatekeepers, mm-hmm. and they're encouraging perhaps young people to make the wrong kind of choices.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, it is incredibly difficult for others in that community to step forward for leadership.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people do it day and daily, and they are the heroes.
Absolutely.
They are absolutely the heroes yeah. because they are creating for their communities different choices.
And it's not.
And I think that's really important.
It's not actually the number of followers that makes you a good leader. It's the nature of the change that you deliver, mm-hmm. isn't it? And I think there are people who are leading in communities, and it's a really tough job, and they probably have a really, really difficult time in competing with other negative leaders in their community, but they're still going, they're still doing it, because they know if they keep chipping away that they can get there and that they can change things. And you're right, it is heroic. Sorry, Darren, were you going to say something there?
No? I think it's... I mean, I've always believed that change does come from the grassroots up.
Yeah.
And it is, I mean, community, the word community, it just means people. And even what we're doing here, and, you know, as a big music fan, one of the big music things against what was seen as established at the time was punk, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
which was huge in Northern Ireland, wasn't it?
It was huge.
Yeah,
and, you know,
more so than other cities.
Even events like this, I was having a chat as well to Jenny earlier on. Even events like this, and what happened with, you know, punk, and for probably some of our younger audience members here who may not know about the Sex Pistols and all, it's worth actually, you know, going to research of that, because their first gig, they had 42 people, I think, at their very first concert, and 30 of those people went into form other bands. Simply Red came out of that, and all these other bands, because people were inspired by what they'd seen.
Mm-hmm.
So events like this, I've said to Jenny, 10 years down the line, you'll have an event where they say, I was at the Mount Stewart event conversations, and I met somebody
yeah,
there
that connection,
who gave me a
then,
cup of coffee yeah. or was standing behind me in the queue for the toilet.
Yeah.
I met somebody and I was inspired, and this is what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is having the conversation, creating the space.
And you're so right, because I think that's the theme really about leadership, isn't it? That it is about connection, and it is about vision, and it is about networking and positively engaging. And that doesn't have to be one person top down, that can be a community deciding the direction they want to go in, and also connecting out with people that they maybe haven't connected with before. Absolutely. And I think that's the exciting bit about Northern Ireland at the minute, is that we do have such a huge culture scene, which didn't happen when I was, you know, growing up in Northern Ireland. We didn't have a cultural scene, and I think that is definitely improving outcomes for communities here. I wonder, I think maybe we've done quite a lot of talking. I wonder if there's any questions that anybody has from the floor for the panel? No? Yeah?
If I'm right, I was a wee bit late, but I haven't heard a single positive comment about political energy. And we're not alone, because I think there's something about party politics that absorbs attention when people get elected. And it absorbs so much attention that even those who have emerged from disadvantaged communities forget about the priority of addressing unemployment or educational underachievement and all related issues around that. And so you even get people from those areas who are elected, who get embroiled in the party stuff, voting to entrench further inequality. And so what do we do? None of you, I think, have really expressed any hope about politics, but if we are going to, whoever we is, look for youthful leadership or other leadership to go in and address those issues, how do you do that without people having to join political power blocks to get involved in that dance?
Mm. Wendy, we were talking about that just before we came in, weren't we? Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, you know, I'm in my 60s now. I never joined a political party, and one of the reasons why I personally never joined a political party, because I thought to myself, well, what if I don't like something they're doing? I'm not going to be able, you know, I have to, you know, what is it, toe the line? I'm going to have to toe the party line as such. So I think it is a difficult circumstances. And, you know, and for Northern Ireland, because so much of it has been about party politics, that has created a difficult space. Look, we have not been very successful at getting beyond a few parties. And, you know, independence, if you look at the south of Ireland or even look across the water, there has been a growth in independent people.
Yeah.
Elected because, you know, they come from our local communities with a vision and a passion, and people can identify with that. Northern Ireland, perhaps it's about political maturity, I don't know, but we haven't got that same stance. It's actually very hard in Northern Ireland to be an independent, and I don't know what Jane has to say about that. But, I mean, that's not to say that I don't believe that party representative politics has a real part to play. It really does. I mean, democracy is built on that. It's just that I also believe that participatory democracy has an equal part to play, and it's when the two things work together that I think you get success. In Northern Ireland, we've had a difficulty where our representative politicians find a tension between participatory democracy because they think because they've been voted in, that gives them something more, and perhaps it does because they have been elected, but it's not to say that the citizen who still has a voice. But I think there are those kind of tensions. I don't have any solutions here, but I think it's being aware of those tensions and encouraging all of us, and particularly perhaps our young people, to believe that they can be a catalyst for change, because each one of us can be a catalyst for change. And even though you may not want to aspire to be in a political party, you can be an active member of civil society. And I think that's real, because a lot of good things in Northern Ireland have been driven by civil society,
absolutely,
not necessarily by political parties.
Jane.
Yes, I think I'm fascinated with this term political energy. But can I just say a very important thing is the vote. And that's something that I think is a way of expressing your political energy, but there's too few people who vote here. Now, undoubtedly, it's because there's disillusionment in the political class, but if more people went out and voted, then that political class would change. And that's what people always have to say. You know, you get the politicians you elect, and for those people who say, I'm not elected, I'll never forget meeting someone who I could call bitterly apathetic. When I was canvassing for the coalition, I said, you know, vote for us, vote for us. And she said, I'm not voting for anybody. I don't vote. And I said, but what about your kids? And she said, they live in England and they're far better off out of this country. Mm. And I thought that was worse. I'd rather have a hardline unionist or a hardline anyone than a bitterly apathetic who's not voting. So vote is a political energy. I mean, I would even suggest maybe bringing in compulsory voting, but don't go there. The other thing I say, I think the media has a hugely important role to play in this, because I think the media aren't asking the sort of questions you're asking. Mm-hmm. What are you doing about poverty? What are you doing about... One of the things, apart from integrated education, that got me into politics was road safety. And I'll never forget somebody coming up to me and saying, there are no votes in road safety. You know, this is about saving lives on the road. And I did something about it, and I got the Bangor Belfast Road, and I got money for it, and I did all sorts of things. And road safety's dropped. It wasn't me that did it. But, you know, things like that are so important, and the media should be asking more questions like you're asking. Thank you.
Sarah, would you ever join a political party in Northern Ireland, or does the political system here really turn you off?
Unfortunately, it does actually turn me off a bit, but I have seen politics in action, like you've said, Sarah, where we actually invite young people along in our East Belfast Youth Work Forum, where we're changing policies, we're working in the communities, we're seeing how young people have a voice in that. And that in itself is really empowering as a worker, and it awakens hope in young people. And we've also seen it in social action-based projects for young people, where they actually go out into the community, they assess the need, they evaluate. And it's not about, you know, all the older generations saying, you have to do this because this has to be met. It's about them making decisions for themselves, and they grow further as adults when they do that. And so that inspires young people. They love it. I've never seen such excitement and enthusiasm for young people when they change their community for the better, actually.
But does it make them want to vote?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah?
It does, actually, because we have politicians coming into youth initiatives and saying, this is what we're doing. I want to know what you want to change in your community. And they're being listened to, and that changes their perspective, 100%.
Okay.
Two short comments. Thank you very much for bringing up that particular terminology into attention, political energy and political parties a way of politicking. Specifically, I want to highlight that us as a community sector, we do politics as well, but we not do the politics that the political parties do. And then community leadership is the element that fills the gap between the political and the realistic or the pragmatic political leadership on one hand and the society, especially the disadvantaged and lower class people who sometimes they are the energy to produce leaders. But once the leaders reach to some position, they lose out and they would be lost out. So that's the whole point where we're looking at the alternatives. What is the solution? The solution is not to look after the magical stick, because it's not exist. The solution is about the potential within the society itself, and the potential within each of the individuals themselves. And we kind of highlighted that point where community leadership is about leading people to look at their potentials, leading people to realize what they are capable of, to do, and then give them a chance to explore themselves and to explore each other as well. Because if we don't give the chance to explore each other, we cannot create that connection which is necessary to challenge the status quo of politicking, the status quo of political life. And then from that particular point, it just intrigued me to give you an example. I was involved in the project with the cross-community project. It was for very small kids, 10 years and 8, 9 years, 10 years, to up to 13 years, kids from both societies. We done a residential in Corrimala, if you remember. One of the activities we've done with them to encourage them to bring a Bill of Rights, all right? That was the... And they brilliantly worked out the most beautiful and humanistic Bill of Rights, which I thought, if the Good Friday Agreement replaced with that Bill of Rights, Northern Ireland would be in a very, very better position in a very, very close future. So that is the point. And then if you lead the people, and especially youth, which they are outstandingly energetic, and they are pure human, and they are, you know, just simply, you know, the future and present, I would say. They are the present and they are the future as well for this society, and give them a chance. And community leadership, but only one term, one condition only, for the community leadership to be influential, to be of effect, shall be independent. Not those kind of community leadership which is shadowing, which is in the shadow of the political parties, yeah. Which is the situation in many countries, in first and foremost, before Northern Ireland, my original home, Kurdistan, which we were having tremendous problems with those particular community organizations which were in the shadow of political organizations, and they were dismantling the magic of the real community leadership and activities.
Thank you, Carmen. Any other questions? Because we're kind of running out of time. Was there any other questions from the floor? If not, I just want to close with a quick run around the panel, just again, because there might be people sitting in this room who are thinking, I can do that, that interests me, and I want to do that. And you may, as you say, Darren, there may well be people wanting to get involved in this kind of work. Let's have a little soundbite from each of you about advice that you would give to someone out there who wants to get involved, who wants to lead, maybe the best piece of advice that you've been given in your career.
We've used various kind of slogans or quotes from people, and one we use is from philosopher Ram Dass, and he says, be an individual, but be part of it all at the same time. And I think that's this kind of intercultural society. It's out there. It's kind of been molded. Is to be. And we've said this to a lot of loyalist bands we've worked with. It says, you know, don't be ashamed of your culture because of the actions of others. You know, intercultural is not about losing your identity and holding hands. It's about, you know, embracing your culture, celebrating it in a peaceful way, but also sharing a space with other cultures. And I think for people out here, especially young people, because we're doing this big Youth for Peace campaign. Is just do it, and that's how you get politicians involved, because it's working at the minute for us, we're seeing it, is they're doing it anyway, the young people, and then the politicians are put in this kind of guilt trip of maybe we should be involved in this because they're doing it anyway. So don't wait for permission, just get together and do it. And when you get passionate people together, and this is how we've thrived as an organisation, who haven't been core funded for 13 years, but we're very active and employing about 80 people a month, is we just do it. We surround ourselves with people who are passionate and just get on with it.
I think somebody else uses that slogan, just do it already. That's taken. Okay, Jane.
One thing I've forgotten, the skills of leadership, I think it's very important to have a sense of humour. Mm-hmm. So when I was thinking about this, it reminds me very much of when I was out canvassing for Brexit not to happen, people were coming up to me and saying, fingers crossed we'll stay in, fingers crossed. And they're doing it the same again with Donald Trump now in America. Okay, you won't get in, fingers crossed. And my line is, no more fingers crossed, get your finger out.
Excellent. I like that. Carmen?
My particular advice would be every one of you, every one of us, have a beautifully created and architected lenses to look through. Just raise your head and look through your lenses, not give that a chance to another people to look and then to explain to you what's going on and what's going to happen. Look through your own lenses and do not adapt what other people's explaining to you through their own lenses. That's what my...
Nice. Thanks, Carmen. Wendy?
Well, I mean, we're talking today about, emerging leadership, and of course that focuses you on the young people of today, and they will be older by tomorrow. But one of the things that we work with a lot of young volunteers, and clearly done some research recently that clearly shows that there are young people in Northern Ireland have a real sense of wanting to make a difference and that there is a real motivation for that, and I think that's really important. So I suppose what I'm thinking of, I'm thinking in these hallowed halls, as it were, where this political family, and you know, had so many the thoughts of all the visitors they had over the years and political influencers and leaders. So I suppose I would leave you with a thought or quote from Winston Churchill, who I believe graced these halls, was that you make a living by what you get. You make a life by what you give.
Very nice. Sarah.
Mine is quite simple. Just set out to be yourself, to be present, to stir up passion in those around you, and to pursue everything you do with excellence.
Very nice. Indeed. I think that deserves a round of applause. Folks, we've run out of time. I just want to finish by thanking Jane, Wendy, Darren, Carwin, and Sarah for sharing so much with us today, your experience and your insights. I think it's been really invaluable, and I've really enjoyed listening to you. And I want to thank you as our audience for your participation and your attention. And I hope you have a lovely day for the rest of the day. Okay, so thank you very much. Thank you.